We're exploring the meaning and concept of character here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Character, by definition, is not cut and dried. It means different things to different people. And in today's world, character is this blanket term that covers all sorts of things. In recent years, researchers studied the ethics of our kids, and they found 99% agree with the statement, "If it's important for me to be a person with good character." So do you value character? Do you consider the character of your friends, your colleagues, your partner? What about the character of elected leaders? Do you take character into account when you vote? We're at 800-642-1234 throughout the hour. Deborah Rohde is a law professor at Stanford University and the founding president of the International Association of Legal Ethics. She is the author of more than 24 books in the fields of professional responsibility, leadership, gender. Her new book is called Character: What It Means and Why It Matters. Deborah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's do some sorting here when it comes to character traits, some laundry sorting. There's moral and there's performance. What is the difference between the two?
Well, we typically think of moral traits such as honesty and integrity and empathy when we say that's a person of character. But we also usually associate character with what psychologists call performance traits like self-control, diligence, perseverance, and grit. And those are critical because they give a person the capacity to act on their moral impulses.
Oh, so you need to have that performance and able to carry out those moral strengths?
Yes.
Do we need to develop and learn moral traits in order to have the performance traits? How are they related?
Well, most people think that there's both a genetic component and, more importantly, a socialization process that gives people a sense of what their families, what their culture thinks is virtuous and what capacities they need to be people of respect and achievement.
So what misconceptions did you run into about character? Do we really use it as this catch-all term?
Well, I think we do, but there's, you know, an awful lot of ambiguity and hypocrisy in how we think about it. There's ambiguity in the sense that most people are people who have mixed traits, and even some traits have a moral quality that depends really on the circumstances. So, you know, a suicide bomber may be a person of great courage, loyalty, and commitment, but we wouldn't ordinarily say they're a person of character. And certainly, you know, perseverance and diligence and self-control are often associated with people who are, you know, totally lack a moral compass, you know. Angela Duckworth, who does research on these performance traits like grit, points out that Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler were quite gritty villains. So the challenge, I think, for us is to develop not just character, but moral character, individuals with strong ethical commitments and the capabilities necessary to realize them and act on them. And that starts pretty early. And while the vast majority of people say that character is important, you quoted the 99% of kids, 95% of adults, where it ranks in priority is quite different. And I think over time we've seen an erosion of many of the concepts that we associate with character. For example, when I went to college, about four-fifths of freshmen said they were strongly motivated to develop a meaningful philosophy of life, and only about 40% said that becoming rich was an important life goal. And today, those values have reversed. Three quarters of college students want to become rich, and fewer than half care about developing a philosophy of life. And so there are, I think, real challenges to developing the priority for character, and we see it, you know, playing out in our political life as well.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that political arena in just a moment here. We're talking with Deborah Rohde. She is a law professor at Stanford, author of many books, including the one we're talking about, Character, What It Means and Why It Matters. You can join in on this conversation as you look inside yourself. What do you think helped build your character? Were you a scout or involved in your local 4-H or YMCA? Did youth sports help you develop character and understand right from wrong? Did hard work help you build character or teach you valuable lessons? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Deborah, does one person view character differently than their neighbor or their spouse? Is character in the eye of the beholder?
Well, to some extent, yes. And, you know, it changes sometimes over time. So, you know, this country used to place considerable importance on sexual fidelity, and we didn't want a president who we thought was committing adultery, or a politician who was engaged in extramarital affairs. Obviously, that's changed a lot over time, and you know, most Americans were willing to forgive and forget Donald Trump's comment about grabbing and his history of marital infidelity. So there's a certain amount of shift in what we consider the most important qualities. But in general, the sort of standard list of virtues that we associate with the term haven't changed that much since Aristotle and the ancient Greeks. Courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom were what he and Plato stressed. And, you know, most of the modern research that looks at the way we think about character finds that those traits are still core. And in character education programs in the schools, those often form the foundations along with some other qualities that we've added as particularly important, kindness, for example, and empathy or tolerance. So I think the core has pretty much remained the same, but how we interpret them has shifted somewhat over time, and the priority that we attach to them has also shifted.
Going back just a moment to the biological aspect of character, is there a biological connection as you talk about these traits? Are we born with them?
Well, most social psychologists think that we have certain predispositions, but that those are shaped very much by the socialization process that we experience in families, schools, and workplaces. So for just one famous example, self-control, in a quite well-known study, a Stanford professor offered four-year-olds a marshmallow.
The marshmallow, right.
They could eat immediately, but said, you can have an extra one if you wait until later when an experimenter returns. And when the toddlers were evaluated decades later, those who had been most able to delay gratification when they were small children were the most successful academically and socially.
Let's pause right there. We'll get back to this discussion in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're spending the hour understanding character and its place in our society. Character first gained traction in our country in the 1800s. It came to signify a group of traits that had both social and moral significance. More than a century later, Congress declared a National Character Counts Week, and then legislation in 1998 was supposed to support and encourage character building in schools nationwide. So how do you think characters should be taught in school? Should it be taught at all? Or should we leave character building to parents? Do you think we accurately define character? Join in with your questions, your observations, 800-642-1234. The book is called Character, What It Means and Why It Matters. Author and Stanford University law professor Deborah Rohde stays with us. Deborah, you were talking there about the marshmallow test and delayed gratification, and you lay out several ways that character can be taught. One is by modeling good character for children. How important is it for kids to see character in the adults around them?
Well, it's critical, and that old cliche, you know, do as I say, not as I do, doesn't work as a child-rearing strategy. Kids pick up what's really valued and important from their parents' behavior, and so setting the right example works a lot better than moralizing. And, you know, if you want to raise kids to care about others, you have to model that in your own behavior. And a lot of studies show that one of the main determinants of people who act altruistically or heroically or dedicate their lives to social justice or social service were raised by parents who had those values and really nurtured them in their children.
What does this modeling good character, what does that look like in practice?
Well, most psychologists say that in the family, what it requires is what they call authoritative parenting. So not authoritarian, which is really highly directive and discipline-oriented, or overly permissive, which sort of lets kids develop at their own pace without a lot of moral judgment. What works is this kind of mix of authority in which parents combine clearly defined limits and expectations along with reasoning, fairness, and love. So what you want is a warm but firm relationship with your children.
Some of us, you know, we heard the phrase, it builds character from parents if we complained about doing chores as kids, doing the dishes, you know, cleaning our room. But there is something to be said for service learning. What have you found about the effectiveness of teaching kids character through service?
Well, it's critical. You know, in studies on altruistic behavior and charitable contributions later in life, a lot depends on what kids pick up in their homes. It also depends on children's experience in schools. And one of the best ways to teach character is through what are called service learning programs, in which students have an opportunity to engage in activities that help others, and then an opportunity to reflect on them and talk about qualities that they see as important in that relationship and the values that they're expressing. So giving students and kids early opportunities to think about how their actions affect others is really critical.
Talking with Deborah Rohde, she's a law professor at Stanford, author of many books, including Character, What It Means and Why It Matters. You can join in. Do you volunteer or participate in service activities? Why do you think it's important for character? And how do you think character should be taught? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, sure. This is a great topic. I think that, you know, lack of character is what's destroying our society right now. You know, the prior generations, they just valued loyalty, character, treating people, others with respect. And today's culture, I think it's taught in the school, is the self-entitlement, that you're entitled to things, the social justice warriors that demonize people. I think character is something that has to come back, but it starts with leadership. And I don't know if we're prepared to do that with the self-entitlement that we have in our society right now.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for that contribution. Deborah, what do you hear there? He's not seeing character today.
Well, I think that view is widely shared by many experts who look at the polls like the one I cited earlier about what young people value most. And if you look at millennials, a lot more say being rich than saying helping others or contributing to their communities. And that's a problem. I think we're also seeing a declining confidence in institutions like governance organizations, Congress, faith in politicians is at an all-time low. Less than a fifth of people have confidence in their leaders. And that's really worrisome in a democratic social order. And part of it has to do with the values that we as voters and citizens prioritize when we pick people. 95% of Americans think that, for example, a president's character is important. Two-thirds think it's very important, yet less than a third think it's more important than policies. And in the latest presidential election, although two-thirds of Americans didn't think that Trump had strong moral character, 62 million voted for him anyway. And that's not atypical. Since the 1950s, it's been more common for the losing presidential candidate than the winning candidate to be evaluated better on honesty. So I think we have to look seriously, not just about what we say about character, but how we act on it and the priority that we place in terms of who we make our leaders and what rewards we provide for success and performance in society. And who do we think of as celebrities? Who do young people really look up to? Is it people with strong moral character, or is it celebrities and those who are rich and famous?
Matt from Wausau had thoughts along those lines, saying that our current president, he says, has a complete lack of character. You know, some people would say President Trump and other politicians are morally corrupt. Help us understand what that means, morally corrupt.
Well, I think, you know, the qualities that we say that we want in a politician is people of honesty and integrity, people who can serve as role models for the youth and spokespeople for the country, and who are committed to democratic values and civic institutions. And, you know, along those lines, the president that we currently have in office performs about the worst of any politician in recent memory. In terms of just the sheer amount of factual misstatement, the way that his own self-interests have affected his political judgments, the kinds of qualities that are and aren't important in picking cabinet officers. I think all of those dimensions, his commitment to democratic values and, you know, the independence of the judiciary and the Department of Justice and a free press, those core institutions, all of those have not been treated with respect and dignity by the president. And that sends a powerful message. And it adds to the erosion of public support for democratic institutions and governance processes.
So, Deborah, how can schools then involve kids in civic and service or lay the groundwork in problem solving that would allow them to build this character early on?
Well, I think what we've seen is a lot of experimentation around character education in the schools, and 85% of parents want schools to provide that kind of education. We haven't done a very good job in identifying programs that demonstrably do increase the qualities that we're concerned about. And part of it is because a lot of the programs that we've institutionalized are more window dressing, and they're fairly shallow and brief, you know, 10 minutes a day on the virtue of the week kind of approach. what we really need to do is to bring together parents, educators, youth organizations, sports programs, to think about a coordinated approach for character, and to use the activities that students engage in, both in and out of the classroom, to develop respect and understanding and appreciation for the qualities that we really value. And the few programs that really have made that kind of concerted effort do seem to have some capacity for building greater tolerance and engagement in civic activities and a commitment to values of tolerance.
Well, let's pause right there. The book is called Character. Author Deborah Rohde is our guide. You can join in 800-642-1234. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about where character comes from and the challenges with developing moral character, which includes qualities like honesty, integrity, empathy, self-control. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Deborah Rohde writes, Thurgood Marshall cared about character. He was the first African-American Supreme Court justice, and a big part of his legacy was his belief in equality. Here he is in 1957 in a televised interview with journalist Mike Wallace talking about President Eisenhower's failure to support racial integration.
We have allowed these other forces like the White Citizens Councils and the Klan to threaten and intimidate good people. Moral leadership should come from the top executive of the government. It's his responsibility.
Do you look for character in elected officials? Do you take character into account at the ballot box? Join in. 800-642-1234. Stanford University law professor Deborah Rohde's new book is called Character, and she stays with us through the hour. Deborah, you dedicate your book to Thurgood Marshall. You were even part of history in the making, having clerked for him. But as you write these character essays, you spend a good deal of time picking out people's flaws, the choices that don't add to moral character. How did you do that for Thurgood Marshall?
Well, you know, I have a couple chapters in the book in which I talk about people of exemplary character, either because of their social service, you know, Albert Schweitzer, Jane Addams, Mother Teresa, or because of their commitment to social justice. And I picked Marshall along with Nelson Mandela and Gandhi and someone not so well known in this country, Ida Wells, who is the African-American woman who launched the first anti-lynching movement. But I think of all those that I profiled, you know, Thurgood Marshall really stands out as having relatively few character flaws, and just a really strong inner core of honesty, integrity, courage, commitment, just all those values that we talked about earlier. And, you know, when he died, a reporter, I think, really well summarized his legacy. He said, not every great man is a good man, and Marshall was both.
Mm. Let's take a call now. Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to observe that character, you know, we've been attacking President Trump for his lack of character, and that's fine. But I don't think the problem is in our leaders. The problem is inherent in us, that we no longer value character. So I look at the last election and the choices that our political parties offered us. Well, one we've reviewed very thoroughly in terms of his lack of character, and the other one also lacked character. It was a person who had turned their office and as a Secretary of State into an ATM machine, and that was our choice. And I remember a time in American history where a great politician, Gary Hart, had to immediately step down when it was revealed that he was having an affair with a staff member, and then character matter to America. So a politician, even a great politician with great ideas, knew that that fact alone would not allow him to be president. And then we fast forward to Bill Clinton, and only now in retrospect do even some liberals criticize him for his lack of character and his philandering.
Well, Saeed, let's let Deborah step in, because Deborah, you do look very closely at President Clinton. Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. And, but I just want to add one sort of historical footnote to what the caller said. Gary Hart was forced out of the presidential race despite having extraordinarily strong ideas and many good qualities. But it wasn't so much that he was having an affair, and it was with not a staffer, but a former model, but because he lied about it. And he did so flagrantly that it raised questions about his judgment. And, he told reporters, go ahead, put a tail on me. You're going to be disappointed in what you find. Well, they did, and they weren't. And I think it was that kind of recklessness as much as anything else that derailed his campaign. Clinton was so interesting because he did, of course, lie most famously on public television about his affair with Monica Lewinsky, because he had a pollster who crunched the numbers and told him that that's what he needed to do to stay in office. But interestingly enough, after the revelations came out and we went through a very labored impeachment process in which people learned more about Clinton's sex life than anyone should have to know, still he left office with one of the highest approval ratings in recent memory. So, people forgave, partly because the economy was strong, partly because although he was highly disrespectful to women in his personal life, he was pretty good on women's issues in his public and political life, and people viewed those questions as more important. I think now, in the aftermath of hashtag MeToo, we might be somewhat less tolerant with the way he treated the White House intern with whom he had the affair, but certainly I think you see the root of the problem of people not caring very much about moral qualities reflected in his time in office.
We're talking with Deborah Rohde. She's a law professor at Stanford University, and her book, Character, What It Means and Why It Matters, is the focus here. What about someone makes you think they lack character? Parents, do you try to model good character for your children? What does that look like? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Brad now in Madison with thoughts on this. Hi, Brad.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think a significant portion of the reason our character has been eroded is the undue influence of big money in our political system. Through the years, the big business money has really taken over from the Lewis Powell memo in 1971. They stacked the court system with these pro-big business people to do Buckley Vallejo in 76 to take away a lot of our ability to regulate money. Citizens United, and then McCutcheon. We really don't have effective laws for dealing with bribery or conflicts of interest and all these different types of corruptions that we need to have, because we really don't have representative democracy anymore. We have more of a plutocracy where the money's in control.
Brad, thank you for those thoughts. Deborah, what about monetary influences here and what it means to character?
Well, I think the caller is absolutely right that one of the reasons that most individuals rate the ethical standards of politicians is so low is because those politicians are driven by the need to put the funders' priorities over those of the national interest. And I think campaign finance reform is a critical part of what we need in order to get elected officials to reflect the values that we care most about, as opposed to, sort of who they can dial for dollars and keep their campaign on track. It's not just the fact that we have Supreme Court decisions and legislation that has failed to curb the role of money in public life, but also that campaigns have become so expensive. And it's just very difficult to run for national office now without having the backing of special interests, unless you're independently wealthy. And if you're independently wealthy, as people like Donald Trump are, that raises other problems of accountability.
Well, let's bring in another call. Delilah joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Delilah.
Hi there.
What's on your mind about character?
Yeah, so this is from a little bit earlier in the broadcast, but I wanted to point out basically the source of your statistics, so the people that you are studying. So if you are a professor at Stanford and you are conducting sociological studies, psychological studies, whatever, what have you, you usually pool from the students at the university. And I wanted to talk about the bias that comes from the, honestly, class structure that you are pulling from at Stanford University when you're talking about students and millennials wanting more wealth.
Well, those are national polls. Those aren't my studies. Those are by Pew Research and by Gallup. And I do think they try for a cross-section of Americans. I mean, it's certainly true that universities have a lot of problems of class bias, but I don't think the research on character is necessarily subject to it, at least not the polls that I was referring to earlier.
We're talking about building a moral character, what it looks like in our country through time. Deborah Rohde's new book is called Character, What It Means and Why It Matters. Parents, do you try to model good character for your children? What does that look like? Did your parents talk about character? What values and practices did they enforce? And teachers, how do you educate students about character? How do you model it in the classroom? Join into the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll have more on this in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're looking at the qualities of moral character. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. One of the ways we develop character is observing it in others who've made a commitment to make a difference in the world and live a life of service. Mother Teresa was a Catholic nun who helped millions of the poorest of the poor. Here she is in a 1979 documentary as she receives the Nobel Peace Prize.
It's a gift to be shared, to give homes to so many homeless people, to give food to the hungry and clothes to the naked, and take care of the so many sick and dying destitute, because we have these homes all over the world now.
Do you volunteer or participate in service activities? Why do you think it's important for character? We're at 800-642-1234. The book is called Character, What It Means and Why It Matters, and author Deborah Rohde stays with us. So, Deborah, most people in our world won't make the sacrifices that would be on par with Mother Teresa. Our lives are fast and busy. What advice would you give us to live a life that's more about giving and less about wanting more?
Well, I think all of us have opportunities in our lives that are reflected in ways large and small about how we care about our families, our friends, our communities, how we respond to social needs and social justice and social injustice. And I think there's a wide variety of research that shows that giving to others gives to the self as well, that being involved in charities in or social cause activities really improves physical health, it extends life, and it leads to increased satisfaction and well-being on a whole variety of dimensions. So giving back is something I think that needs to be much more strongly nurtured in our culture. And, of course, many of us do it in ways not on the national scale that I profiled in the book, but in our daily interactions. And we can certainly pass those values on to our children as parents, as educators, as coaches of the Little League, and get them to value the fundamental qualities of honesty and integrity and empathy that are critical to a life well lived and a flourishing society.
Well, let's bring in Carol now in New Richmond. Hi, Carol. Hi, Carol. Are you there?
I am there.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, really enjoy your show and just listening to your speaker today, thinking about the past when my mom and dad were 4-H leaders. And so all of us kids, of course, belonged to 4-H. We also went to church on a regular basis. And I think some, like you said, some of those things are lacking, but there's so many opportunities. It wouldn't have to be 4-H or church. It's just that I think when you do it as a family, too, there's times where you can then point out things that, you know, are quite meaningful that we offer to our communities. And you go away, like you said, with such a great feeling, even at a young age, you know, when you visit a nursing home or whatever. You leave there, you know, even when you're 3 or 4, knowing that you made a difference in somebody's life.
Oh, Carol, thank you so much for those observations. Let's bring in Eve now in Oconomowoc. Hi, Eve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for the show. I'm just wondering if guest speaker has any knowledge of a few years ago, the Chicago Cubs interview with 60 Minutes. And the coach, you know, was trying to gather his team, and he was doing interviews and talking to old girlfriends of the players he was going to hire. It was wonderful, wonderful. But it happened to be that year the Cubbies won, and he thinks it had a lot to do with the character of the ball players that he was hiring and on that team.
So character had to do with the winning that went on and the spirit that the team had. Deborah, any thoughts on that, on character in sports?
Yeah, well, I do have a section on that in the book. And, you know, we often think that kids' involvement in sports is a great way to build character, and it's one of the big selling points. Unfortunately, the research sort of shows the contrary, and that a lot of involvement in team sports, in fact, has negative effects, partly because so many of the programs place too much emphasis on winning, and coaches don't always model, and parents don't always model appropriate behavior for the kids. So I think there are lots of opportunities through organized sports programs to model, you know, values like honesty and good sportsmanship, but a lot of them do so only in rhetorical flourishes at the annual banquets and not in the daily practices where kids see cheating tolerated or unnecessary violence applauded on the field. So we really need to, I think, engage in a closer look in what values our sports programs are actually nurturing. And there are a number of organizations that are involved in doing that. Positive Coaching Alliance, for example, teaches coaches to be more mindful of the values that they're inspiring. And we need more of those initiatives to create leaders that are oftentimes great sports figures, because that's who kids idolize, and we want to be sure that they have the right role models.
Well, let's bring in Deb now in Menominee. Deb, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that as far as I'm concerned, character starts at home, and I think parents really need to start holding their kids accountable for bad behavior. As an example, you know, I talked to my son's basketball coach when he was in eighth grade that if he was not behaving well, that he should be pulled out of the game, because I wanted a decent young man more than a win. And I think more parents need to do that and hold their kids accountable.
Deb, thanks so much. Have you seen, with that type of parenting, what have you seen in your child, if I may ask?
Well, they're grown and are married and have children and are wonderful young men. And I hear that from other parents across the board, how polite and well-respected they are.
Deb, thanks so much for those comments. Deborah, do you see how character can be passed to the next generation?
Yeah, I think that's a great example, and of a parent who really made values that are important to a life well lived, important for a child. And, you know, I think all too often parents miss opportunities to do that, sometimes in very well-guided efforts to shield their kids from the risks of failures and the consequences of bad choices. And I talk about an example from research done by an educator in which an affluent couple tried to reverse a disciplinary sanction against their 16-year-old kid for cheating. And the boy had engaged in plagiarism, and the parents were afraid that having that on his record was going to mar his opportunities to get into an elite college. And unfortunately, the message that the kid took from the incident was that he hadn't really done anything wrong, and everybody did it, and no one forced him to consider the effect of his conduct on all the kids who didn't cheat, or the fact that rationalizations for that cheating could really get him into trouble in later life. So,
well, really quickly here, you've written dozens of books. You joined Stanford Law School faculty 40 years ago as its third female. How is exploring character and writing this book, how has it left you feeling about our world?
I wish I could say more optimistic. And, you know, certainly in this highly materialistic era in political culture that doesn't seem to value the important attributes that I talk about in the book, there's a lot not to be hopeful for. But I think what is a source of optimism is the fact that we're having these conversations, that we have character education programs in the schools. We have people like your talk show that are bringing these efforts and values into the foreground, and we're getting people to think more, I think, deeply about what character means and how we can best institutionalize it in our culture.
Deborah Rohde is a law professor at Stanford. The book is Character, What It Means and Why It Matters. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.